This is Neelan Parker, and I am with George Williams, who is a former program officer for the IRI in Monrovia, Liberia. And if we could just begin by talking a little bit about what your role was, what your background was, and the role of IRI in the 2005 elections.
Well, I serve, like you said, as program officer, basically being serving as the principal assistant to the country director. My role was to advise on the nuances of the landscape, political landscape. IRI, as you know, work with political parties, and my role was to provide guidance and direction to the institution's program in terms of engagement with stakeholders.
And what is your background?
My background is economics. From the University of Liberia, but I have a family trail of a father who was into politics, and as a result, I got closely knit with a lot of the actors on the scene. So it made my work quite easy because my background helped to facilitate my engagements with them and engagement with the institution.
Could you briefly describe party politics before and after the elections?
Well, before 1985, or 2005, Liberia's history has predominantly been a one-party state up to 1980, and then there was the coup, and then in 84, 85, we had the first semblance of a multi-party democracy. Those elections were marred by widespread abuses and what have you. But the 1997 and the 2005 elections were truly multi-party processes that created many parties, but not strong parties really. Parties were more individualized, personalized institutions, other than they were more personalized than institutional parties. Yeah. Most of them center around major mainstream actors who, for non-ideological reasons, prefer to establish their own institutions other than join forces and amalgamate their resources. And so it's always been a splinter environment of parties. In many respects, that still obtains even now. But the 1997 and 2005 elections have only, in terms of party strength, have only brought about one or two institutions that have proven to be real institutions over and above a lot of the others that exist today.
So roughly how many parties emerged at the beginning of the electoral period? And did the numbers change?
We had over 30 political parties, and as elections drew nearer and the requirements for those parties grew stiffer, that number reduced to about 20. I think, if my memory serves me right, we had like two independent candidates finally in the process during the 2005 elections.
Did any of the parties develop youth wings or armed wings before or during the campaign?
Armed wings, no, but they had what they called their militant brigades. Their role was to mobilize vigorously in the communities. Some of the parties have their roots in the militant period of the war. For example, the NPP has its roots in the MPFL. Our corp under Alhaji Krumah has its roots in Ulemo K, and several others, you know, whose leaders, presidential candidates, had their roots in some war and fashion.
What responsibilities did the NEC have for regulating the role of political parties?
Well, as far as the regulations are concerned, they have direct supervision over registration, monitoring and assessing the work of political parties in the country, and part of their role is to ensure that parties meet up with certain gaming requirements, like the financial disclosure requirement and keeping their visible presence continually, so as to avoid a situation where parties evolve just before elections and then after they disappear. And so they've had the chance to close down a few parties, revoke their accreditation, and just, I think this week or last week, I was listening to the radio, some have been arraigned for questioning, you know. So, yes, they have a crucial role to play in the existence and strengthening of party life, political party life in the country.
How successful would you say that regulation is?
It hasn't been. If I were to grade them on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give the NEC maybe a 5. Yeah, I think they can do more and should do more. They should do more. I think political parties are taking a lot for granted. And we think political party registration, the process leading up to registration, should be strengthened. We think while it is true that there has to be equal access, the whole process of galvanizing constituency support has to be strong and strengthened so much so that not just anybody can come and establish a party overnight. Yeah.
Did the NEC dispense or regulate funding
to the parties? Not that I know of.
Did the NEC administer penalties or infractions when they violated code?
The NEC did, but again, Liberia's coming out of war, and so a lot was overlooked in the process of trying to ensure and maintain peace. Their role as well is to help as many of the other institutions to sustain the peace we have. While there are regulations, they tend to overlook those regulations in the interest of peace.
You mentioned that the EMB handled the registration of political parties.
Yeah.
Were any other ministries like Justice or Interior involved in that?
Yes, I think the judicial system, because in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, most of the parties had to be registered through articles of incorporation and what have you. So the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I would suppose the Ministry of Justice, I would suppose, I'm not sure, and then the NEC.
Was there an inter-political party NEC dialogue committee?
Yes, in fact, the institution that I work with, IRI, then, was a facilitator in the creation of what they call the Inter-Party Consultative Committee, IPCC, that brought together the parties and the NEC and a few other stakeholders to look at the issues surrounding the elections, equal participation, and facilitate the overall process.
And how successful was that effort?
Well, that effort was good. It led to a lot. In fact, it facilitated the creation of what we call, what was the first ever code of conduct for political parties in Liberia. And that was lessons learned from our trip to Ghana to observe the 2004 elections.
Did the NEC play a role in vetting candidates, and what did it do? Were there certain kinds of people who were excluded from holding office?
There were regulations, but again, moving away from war and, you know, trying to institute a more civil environment, a lot of the regulations, statutory regulations, had to be suppressed to ensure that, again, everybody had equal access. We had warlords participating. Some people who had some criminal records themselves had to participate. So the NEC had to overlook a few things so as to allow the process to flow freely.
Were there any rules in place that required political parties to register the dates, times, and place of campaign rallies? And were those rules employed selectively or applied uniformly?
At a certain time of the campaign, that became a requirement so as to ensure that security was in place. But initially, it wasn't on the table. Again, like I said, a lot was overlooked. But as time went by, it was important, and the NEC ensured that they knew what was happening. Party activities were forwarded to the neck so that they knew exactly what was going on.
Were political parties required to disclose their sources of revenue and then their expenses?
They were. How effective that was, and remains another question, but they were required to do that.
How could you make that more effective?
It's a difficult, really difficult thing to say. I wish I had maybe 2-3 weeks to think about that. Because, you know, people join parties virtually overnight, and depending on how sensitive or strategic they think the parties are, they come with their own resources, and they wouldn't originally or beforehand disclose to the neck and the party where the sources come from. So it's so difficult. Parties will draw budgets, and how the budgets are funded can be very obscure. And so, in terms of the nitty gritty of how budgets or parties source their funding, it will call for serious study and research by the NEC so as to be able to control that. But at the top of my head, I would say it's really, really difficult to do.
Contacting voters can be very expensive and difficult, especially here where the infrastructure is limited. Fuel costs are high, security can be uncertain. What were the main methods political party leaders used to try to reach potential voters? And did these methods have any particular advantages or disadvantages?
Well, the most effective means of ensuring wider coverage is through the radios, stations, especially the UN radio, and Radio Veritas that cover a good portion of the country. Meeting with the constituency themselves, going to the community, remain the most effective, but the most in terms of cost. And so knowing what the economic position of most of the candidates have been, I mean, it was difficult to cover the country over a short period of time. And so, but between using the radio, television, very limited coverage, and personal visitation, I mean, personally, I would say personal visitations, but during the period and given the infrastructure, using the radios would have been the most effective.
Were there any party boycotts, and on what grounds?
Party boycotts, not that I know of. I know the NEC did restrict a few persons from participating, and the Supreme Court came back and nullified the position of the NEC, but generally nobody was restricted from participating in the process.
I'm assuming you're speaking of Marcus Jones?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. They had a situation where they didn't meet up with certain requirements, and the NEC restricted them, but the Supreme Court came in and nullified that, but a common ground was reached between the NEC and the candidates, because ballot papers were already printed when that issue was resolved, and made it difficult for the NEC to go back and reprint ballot papers, and so they were not part of the process.
How did they come to an agreement?
I don't quite remember what the details are, but if my memory serves me right, the cost of they presented a cost to the NEC, which was forwarded to government, and those costs were given back to them, or a portion of the cost was given back to them.
If you were providing advice to other countries about what steps you've taken here with respect to regulation or support to candidates, what would you recommend to others?
Ooh. Support to candidates. Well, those are questions I would prefer to have thought about more in detail. Coming away from our elections and just looking back on it, one of our recommendations would be that the NEC look into providing support for candidates who maintain or obtain a certain threshold, electoral threshold, in terms of votes. Because the threshold represents number of votes, and those voters represent taxpayers. Though not necessarily, but they do represent a significant portion of the taxpayers, and if the taxpayers can see their candidate in a process like that, it is important that some of their taxes can go into supporting their aspirations as far as the electoral process is concerned. So I think, and that helps to also reduce the number of candidates so as not to confuse the limited voting populace, to have established a threshold where support, public support, in terms of finances and other means can be created to provide, enhance the prospects of candidates.
Was there an assessment of the threats against the process in advance of the election?
At many different levels there were. At the level of the NEC itself, they did their own assessment. At the level of the parties, IRI, working with the parties, did an assessment, and that materialized in what came out called the Code of Conduct, to help to control the way party actors carried out themselves.
In the assessment of the threat, who were the likely victims and who were the likely perpetrators, and what were their motives?
Well, likely perpetrators would have been parties who didn't see themselves as being very,
viable?
Sure of winning electoral seats and what have you. The victim would have been the system or the process, and peace overall would have been jeopardized. And so every different sector, the NEG, the parties, civil society, had to assess the risk at many different levels and contribute to reverting any possible occurrence of a situation.
Did these predictions turn out to be right? Were there spoilers, and how did they attempt to spoil the election?
There were spoilers. For instance, during the runoff, we had a situation between CDC candidates, voters, and UP voters. There were very nasty comments and banners flying around, and that could have offset a lot of things. So many different institutions again went out campaigning in many different ways to revert or avert any standoff between the two institutions. There were mudslinging from many different ends, and messages had to go out to ensure that there was peace and quiet, and that the process went on as smoothly as possible.
And who were the security partners protecting the process?
Well, OMEL, the National Police, all the other security actors in the country were deployed to ensure that peace was maintained in the process. But OMEL was very critical in that.
It's sort of a final question. Do you have any recommendations to someone who is in your position in the future for programs they might do or ways that they might support political parties? Are there ideas that you have about what political parties need now going into the next election?
Frankly, one of the recommendations in working with the NEC is that there is a need and will be a need to ensure that registration processes for parties are stiffened a little, and that parties generally building their capacities, but more than just trainings, but assisting, especially in their regional offices, ensuring that those offices are structured and supported in ways that will live beyond just campaign periods. Campaign is from elections to elections, and it should not just be for one phase of it. In terms of working with the parties, I think anybody coming in that position for an environment like Liberia ought to work with parties in sort of streamlining how parties are structured and how parties go about institutionalizing. I think that is important. While multi-party democracy may be a good thing, it is the careful assessment of the environment is important, and institutions such as IRI can work with the parties to ensure that it is more streamlined. We don't need the number of parties we have, so that ideology, whatever strategic approaches can be employed that would distinguish one party from the other. As it stands right now, the parties are divided along personality lines, and that does not help in terms of long-term democratic strengthening. We need parties that are divided on issues that based on personalities. And the different personalities can come into helping to strengthen the institution. So institutional growth should become the focus within a small environment like ours. Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Lee.